Welcome to the Audible presented by Trader Joe's. I'm Stuart Mandel, joined as always by Bruce Feldman, and we are joined for the second time this spring by our friend and colleague Max Olson, because it is portal week, is portal window week, spring portal window, and Max is the portal authority. We are recording this on the second day that it's been open, and names are starting to filter out. It's not like in the November, December one, where it's just like this first day avalanche, but I don't know. What are the biggest developments so far, Max?
Yeah, guys, appreciate you having me on as always. I think over under probably like 10 players go in the portal over the course of this podcast. So, you know, we'll try to keep an eye on it. I thought Tuesday was significant in terms of the quantity of players going in. Like a year ago when we had the first spring portal window, you know, which is this kind of 14-day period, last chance for the underclassmen to transfer and be eligible in the fall. Last year, we only had 90 players go in the portal on opening day. Yesterday, the number was 220. So that's a bit of an uptick. I would say I don't know that there was a ton of like fireworks in terms of like big superstars or starting quarterbacks or like guys that everyone is like maybe scrambling to go recruit right now. A lot of the big names kind of had teased out that they were going to go in the portal in the past few weeks. But, certainly this is a period where it's just going to be a record-setting cycle again this year because there is no one-time transfer rule. Nobody's playing by that rule right now. So it's really kind of a free-for-all, and transfers in this, you know, in this year to date so far are up 25%. So the roster instability is pretty wild right now. It's tough for these coaches to reckon with. And over the next 2 weeks here leading up to the deadline, I think we'll see a ton more going in.
Yeah, let's get into some of the bigger ticket items. Not a surprise, Damian Martinez, who's one of the best running backs in the country. New coaching staff at Oregon State. Jonathan Smith, obviously, and that staff, at least the offensive staff, moved on to East Lansing at Michigan State. Damian Martinez, big bruising running back, 2,000 yards in his first 2 years in Corvallis. He's in the portal. He'd be, as we stand right now, right? Your most wanted guy. I had heard was that Miami was one to watch there because they really, really, really need a running back, and he might be a really good fit in terms of that. How do you size up where Martinez fits and what we're looking at here?
Yeah, this is one of the best young running backs in college football. He broke out as a true freshman right away, was the Pac-12 Offensive Freshman of the Year in 2022. First team all conference guy in both of his seasons at Oregon State. And you know, like as we've seen a few times this offseason, whether it's Cam Ward or DJ or Silas Bolden or some of these guys, I think they're, you know, a lot of them look at the schedule that these two Pac-2 schools are gonna be playing this fall and I think kind of had some concerns and felt like they needed to go places where they could really kind of boost their draft stock. And that's the case for Martinez. He wants to be one of the top running backs selected in the 2025 draft. And, he's a guy that, he's number one on the best available list to start off this spring. And, I think you're right, Bruce. I think Miami has to feel like it's in great shape. I believe they're having an in-home with him tonight. And it's just a great situation for him because, you know, they've got the quarterback in Cameron Ward. They've got receivers and Xavier Restrepo and Jacoby George. But running back, huge question mark this spring. Mark Fletcher injured, AJ Allen injured, Henry Parrish is in the portal, Trevante Citizen, who's dealt a bunch of injuries, he's in the portal. So the fit there is pretty obvious. And, I think you saw very quickly when Martinez went in the portal, it kind of established what the running back market is this spring. It's, you know, Kentucky, Tennessee trying to get in the mix, Mississippi State, Arizona. There's just a few teams that certainly are looking at him and saying, you know, we're willing to pay up for a guy that's an instant impact player. So he's going to take 5 visits in the next 2 weeks. So that's his plan to. I agree with you, Bruce. I think Miami's the favorite right now.
First of all, that is such a geographically diverse list of schools.
Yes.
Spanning from, you know, Arizona.
For a kid from Texas. None of them close to Texas. Yeah.
So the interesting thing about Damian Martinez is you don't usually see this, but when the news first came out that he was going in the portal, it was reported that he was set to make $400,000 at Oregon State this past year. Like, nobody ever publicly discloses numbers. And then John Canzano did a follow-up on that and And that also like reiterated that number, but there was $8,000. Basically, the idea was, is he leaving because they're not paying him what he's worth, or that he they didn't deliver? Like, it basically became like a referendum for Oregon State fans on their collective. So I heard you just keep saying, well, this is a good fit for him because they're running backs and whatnot. But do we think, how much do we think this is somebody's going to pay him more than $400,000?
Yeah, I think that's like kind of the unfortunate thing when you lead out with that he, is going to make that, is that, people just kind of automatically say, okay, wow, 400 was not enough for him to stay at Oregon State. Like, how much is he going to make at this next school? And, I don't really think from talking to, his representation, I don't really think the money was the problem, nor was, Oregon State making good on its payments a problem either. I mean, I think this is a situation for a guy has thought about transferring a few times. And I think when you're a freshman All-American, I think for the rest of your career, you're going to have people reaching out to you trying to convince you to go in the portal and get a raise. And it's great that Oregon State's so competitive and can pay its top guys and stuff like that. But I don't think this is ultimately, like, I think he probably will make more than $400,000 at his next school, but I don't think that this was an issue of he was not getting enough there. But you're right. So, like, we don't really see that getting put out there. I don't know how much we will see that going forward. I don't think agents actually want that to be the case here. And I think it's a little bit unfortunate when that happens, because very quickly you saw the fan base turn on Damian Martinez, and they were going to anyways. But I think that it makes that situation, I think, a lot more toxic when people are really, thinking that you're just doing this for money. But I don't know, maybe as reporters we want to see more of that transparency, but I think that it causes problems too.
I also think what's hard, especially if you're an Oregon State fan, because you've already been like kicked in the stomach by the whole Pac-12 thing.
Totally.
You've seen some of your best talent, not all of it, but some of it. Omar Spates, goes to LSU. Easton Mascarenhas, Arnold ended up going to
Both
USC.
Arnolds at
Obviously,
USC. Yep.
yeah. Silas Bolden's dynamic receiver now. He
Aiden
is
Childs,
going to
would have been the
Texas. Aiden
quarterback of the
Childs at
future.
Michigan
Michigan
State.
State.
That one's a little different to me, just because he's following the coach with him to Michigan State. I mean, you can be ticked off at Jonathan Smith for that more, but it's the ones who end up, leaving and not, going someplace else. I'd be surprised if Damian Martinez ended up going to East Lansing, but I just think it's just hard when you see your best players who are really productive guys, end
But
up.
and it also reinforces for other players, Bruce, then that notion that this is not like a power school anymore, if all of your guys are bailing,
Right.
which is
Yeah.
tough.
It stinks. It stinks for Oregon State and Washington State. They're, well, now former AD Pat, like their presidents and ADs have really been trying to sell the idea that no, we're still in the Pac-12. We still wear the logos. We're just going to make all this money. But it's just not reality. Like, they are Group of Five programs now, or they're viewed that way. And so now they're getting to experience what it's like to be Boise State, or any number of schools where the best players, once they're on the national radar, transfer.
And
It's
that's the thing,
also.
honestly. Like, I like talking to Cameron Ward and his dad during that recruiting process. Like, it was not about like we're going to go to whatever school can give us $1 million. It was like we're going to go to a school that gives him a chance to really move the needle in terms of his draft stock. And I think that's what these guys are looking at. They're looking at the Mountain West schedule that those schools are going to be playing, and they're like, I don't. This might be a little bit counterproductive for me proving that I should be a high draft pick.
This also happened to their women's basketball team. And by the way, in basketball, they're going to be in the WCC. They made the Elite Eight and they were going to bring everybody back. And then, like, four of the five starters are in the portal. I mean, I just can't imagine how demoralizing it is to be a fan of one of those two schools right now. It's just like it's like, okay, how are we going to get kicked in the stomach this week?
Max, I want to ask you, there's the school to me that one of the more interesting programs in the country right now is Arizona. They had an amazing year last year. They are built, I think, if they were able to, especially if Fish would have stayed, to be a legit playoff team this year with everything they had coming back. Now they still have Fifita coming back. They still have T-Mac, All-American receivers coming back. You lose some really good players who did go with Jed Fish. You lose a terrific running back who goes up to Seattle. You lose Pryce Shock, who's a really long corner. And now one of the ones that's really interesting to watch is Takario Davis, who is, super, super long cornerback and was a playmaker. Why don't you walk people through a little bit about his situation, how you think that plays out, and, what your assessment is of what's going on with Oregon?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember, Stu, when you did your first like way too early, was Arizona like pretty close to top 10?
Yeah, I think they were like just outside the top 10.
That would make sense. Yeah, I think they probably would have been viewed as like, probably the Big 12 favorite, I would assume, before all that went down. Yeah, Takario Davis is a situation that we've not really, there's not like a really a ton of precedent for it in this portal era. And that is that, after the coaching change, after Jed Fish went to Washington, Takara Davis, like a lot of players at Arizona, put his name in the transfer portal. But he stayed. He is still on campus. He is still going through spring practice with the team. And this new coaching staff is, trying to convince him to stay. It's like a day by day process. He has not, officially withdrawn from the transfer portal. So he can continue to have conversations with other coaches, other schools. He can keep being recruited. I think he could even probably go take official visits if he wanted to. And so it's a deal where he's going through spring ball, but he's keeping his options open. I think he's trying to give the new staff a chance and trying to figure out if it's a good fit for him. But like you said, Bruce, this is another like really long, talented corner who led the Pac-12 in pass breakups last year. Someone who could really pick his school if he wants to make a move. And I think the ability to kind of just have open communication with anybody, it's something like I think that's probably an advantage for him as he tries to figure out what to do here. But yeah, you don't really see usually at these places if you put your name in the portal, we're cleaning out your locker. So one of the few players who I think leaves his options open. And if when that day comes, if he officially pulls his name out of the portal, I think that's a big win for Brett Brennan and Dwayne Akina and that staff.
If you have that kind of leverage, if you're that coveted, that talented, I would not be surprised to see a lot more of this because if you have an agent and it's almost basically like, how high is everybody going to jump for this? Right. It is such a unique dynamic where I think it's got to be a something that is really probably pissing off coaches because all of a sudden now they're looking around. Like I had heard what I'm about to say right after the bowl games were announced, where there were agents and some of them were pretty prominent, were having their players almost do kind of a work stoppage and say, hey, we're not going to do some of the activities and OTA stuff in this interim before we get deep into bowl practice. You want to do something, you have to renegotiate our contracts now. And I'm, as you're talking about this specific situation, like I could see, if there's the time frame isn't changed, or maybe how long you can be in a port, like it just seems like there is, you'd have a lot more players who have at least some options be willing to do this.
Yeah, I mean, like again, it takes the coaching staff willing to put up with it, obviously. And if you're one of their best players, then you kind of have to. I think that one thing you tend to observe is that basketball recruiting tends to be a year or two ahead of football recruiting when it comes to like the craziness and the transfers and stuff like that. And I think we're seeing that a lot at the end of the season, guys that are declaring for the draft and putting their name in the portal and just kind of leaving all the options open. And I could see. I could see some prominent guys. I mean, we kind of had that right to some degree with the quarterbacks in the cycle, right, Bruce, in terms of in December, some of these guys that could go pro, but at the same time put the name in the portal and see what comes back. So yeah, I think it in terms of like athlete empowerment, it certainly gives you the freedom to it's not tampering if that name's in the portal. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see. I think you're also touching on a thing that comes up a lot in the conversations I have with coaches right now. When they talk about, what does this look like without a one-time transfer rule, I think it is very frustrating on the GM, on the collective side, that you lock a guy up, but it's really for like 6 months at a time. I think that you're kind of there's kind of, even the players that signed somewhere in January and enrolled for spring ball, some of them went back in the portal yesterday, and there's been a lot of rumors of other guys that might do the same, and so that pressure of like maybe constantly having to renegotiate or feeling like a guy's with you, but maybe not for a year. You know, I think that's something that is really challenging the system right now.
I mean, I don't think enough has been made of, you know, it was already considered, you know, coaches were already complaining about having, you know, everybody's a free agent and just the chaotic nature. But when the first the lawsuit in West Virginia put a, you know, halt on limiting how many times you can transfer and still play right away, and now the NCAA is just going to go ahead and make that the rule. I mean, that just upped the chaos by I don't even know how much. These guys, like you said, you could enter the portal in. Well, look at Caden Proctor, right? I mean, he transfers to Iowa, spends a couple months there. Actually, no, I'm going to come back to Alabama. You know, all well before we get to, you know, like basically before the end of spring practice. So, like, I can't even begin to imagine how they're managing, you know, roster management right now, because you don't even have that. Like Lane Kiffin was like got in right under the wire, right? Remember last year he was so proud of himself that he locked in three quarterbacks, one of whom was in his last year of eligibility. And then another who, okay, he used up his one time exception. We've got him for 3 years. Nope, not anymore.
Yeah. And in this cycle, so there's been like 2,100 transfers so far since August, and about 500 of them are repeat transfers. And yeah, Caden Proctor or Henry Parrish or some of these, like there's a couple of exceptions of like, yeah, that guy's going to have a chance to be a starter and stuff. But honestly, guys, you look at, especially the names that went in yesterday, and I think there's close to 50 of them yesterday. It's a lot of guys who have been to two schools and have still not, you know, not figured it out, not earned a starting job and stuff like that. And you, at some point, and that number is just going to keep going up as this rule changes. But at some point, like you probably have to go back the other way around and be like, wait, why would we take this guy when we could just like take a high school recruit and develop him for a couple of years if it hasn't worked out for them in a couple places?
I want to ask you, so as a reporter on this, I imagine you are.
Oh, and by the way, another Colorado player just did the same thing. So, yep, that list is growing and growing.
As you predicted. So a few days ago, you know, kind of on the eve of the portal opening back up, there was a report that Bear Alexander, USC's most prominent defensive lineman and a former five-star recruit who started his career at Georgia and has bounced around a lot of places in high school and now at USC, that was going in the portal. And then I believe it was him himself who said it wasn't true. How, I don't want to say how like exhausting is it to kind of keep track with this player's planning on going into the portal, or the speculation that they're going in, then they don't, then they like, because honestly, if you're on social media, you can see that a guy's planning on going to the portal. And if you're not like just living on social media, you just assume he's in and that's that. And then all of a sudden you find, oh, that never happened.
Yeah, this is and I had this conversation with someone involved in these things yesterday, and they made a good point, and that is that, you know, this is probably the toughest transfer period to report on so far, and probably will continue to be, because obviously you're seeing more and more people saying like that players are expected to go in the portal, right? That's in this year. We've seen a lot of that. But the reality is, and when it comes to like dealing with coaching staff, dealing with collective, these things are very fluid conversations that go back and forth. You know, the portal is leverage for these players that they can say, hey, if you don't pay me more, then I'm going to go in the portal. You can make that threat. But until that name pops up in the transfer portal, like it still could kind of go either way in a bunch of these cases. So you're going to hear a bunch of rumors about guys. There were plenty leading up to Tuesday, particularly with like a bunch of Louisville players of like, oh, all these guys are going to go in. And none of them did on Tuesday. That doesn't mean they won't. But you know, I think it is tough to follow and report on because, yeah, Bear Alexander said he's staying at USC. You know, we'll see at the end of the deadline if Bear Alexander's in the portal or not, right? I think it's for a coaching staff, you got to stay on top of these until May 1st, basically. And, you know, there's just a lot of back and forth and renegotiating and, you know, at times, and I don't really put it on the kids, guys. I honestly don't. Like, I think you talk to enough people that say it's the reps, it's the parents who are asking for more. Maybe the player doesn't necessarily want to leave, but that's kind of how the game is played right now. And so you kind of have this game of chicken here for the next couple of weeks.
It's a very good point. And you know, I've heard many stories of it this year of guys who they didn't want to leave. They like their teammates, they like their coach, they want to stay. But a parent or an agent said, no, 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 we're gonna, you know, if you go in the portal, you can make X amount more. And you know, at the end of the day, they're still 18, 19, 20-year-old kids who don't wanna, you know, get into a conflict with their parent over it, and they just do it. But of course, in our reporting of it, naturally, like, we don't know that to be the case. So it's the player entered the portal. On a team basis, I mean, you guys talked about Arizona off the top. One of the reasons we thought this spring window might be more active is because of how many schools had a coaching change so late. And so the ones I've been kind of waiting to see, okay, when is the avalanche going to begin? Possibly Michigan, Alabama, Washington. Now, when I was at Alabama, Kalen DeBoer indicated they don't actually have that many scholarships available as people think. But I don't, you know, Michigan's an interesting one because Harbaugh left for the NFL so late, nobody really entered the portal. Washington is like, has no offensive linemen. When do we think these schools will start to pounce? Is it that there just aren't guys that they would want necessarily yet in the portal?
Yeah, that's part of it, is like the players that you see in the portal on day one are not necessarily going to be the stars of the next 2 weeks here. Last year, it was, you know, I'd say probably the best player that ended up transferring last spring was probably Keon Coleman. And he was right, you know, a lot closer to the deadline when he left Michigan State and went to Florida State. So, yeah, I think that there's, especially if you're at some of those schools and like you probably have players that aren't in the portal reaching out to you saying, I want to go to your school. Like it probably, yeah, it doesn't all have to play out on April 16th. But, you know, Michigan, you're right, is an interesting one because I think between the playoff run and the, you know, extreme likelihood that Jim Harbaugh was going to the NFL, Michigan didn't really get into the portal very much in December. They took two players. I think Jashon Barham, from the linebacker from Maryland, I think is going to end up being a really good pickup for them and will make an impact. But, you know, Michigan did a great job loading up last year for that title run with veteran guys, but really kind of stayed out of the portal this time. So, I've seen plenty of people pointing to, well, are they going to go get a quarterback because of the guys that they have in their competition? And I think the question there is like, well, who are you trying to go get? Who's the proven arm that, you know, is better than all the options in the room? So I think that there will be a lot of eyes on Michigan here over the next couple of weeks. Do they make any kind of big move? And, you know, honestly, I think that the 12-team playoff is going to motivate some of these schools to just be like, all right, we're pretty close. Like if we're maybe a couple of missing pieces away from playing for, you know, conference title or something like that. So, yeah, I think that will motivate some buyers this time of year. But, yeah, you're right, Alabama, I think there's a need there at DB for sure. And I'm sure Alabama, as they usually do, will go out and get a couple of the better guys in the portal. But, you know, a bunch of the schools that I've kind of reached out to ahead of the window opening, kind of like, yeah, we don't really need much. We're kind of more playing defense right now, hoping to retain not just our studs, but then our good backups who are behind studs that we don't want to, you know, lose from the program. So, you know, as we knock out more spring games and people get to the end of spring, you know, I think we'll see some more movement.
Back to the podcast in a second, but Bruce, even this late into the spring, you know, we're still seeing college football programs hiring staff members, support staff members, analysts, GAs, whatnot. Hope they've been using LinkedIn Jobs, because if you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. LinkedIn isn't a job board. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. On LinkedIn, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Hire professionals like a professional on LinkedIn. Here's what you're going to do. You're going to post your job for free at linkedin.com/audible. That's linkedin.com/audible to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
Max, I want to ask you, this is something that has come up from talking to some players who've been in the portal, and
Yeah.
it's not the first time I've heard this, but it's definitely something I heard recently. Is we, you know, before we talked about Damian Martinez 400 grand, and you know, people throw, you know, th numbers get thrown around a little bit on social media about what somebody may be getting, and coaches hear it, and then all of a sudden, you start to find out after the fact, the player, I don't know how often it is this case, but there's definitely, you know, you hear of a handful of examples, sometimes coming from the player themselves, that they end up with really maybe a fourth of what they thought they were getting. And I feel like that is so different than, you know, Stu and I have talked about this offline quite a bit over the years since NIL first happened, about like, this is much different than, or this seems to be much different than real, I don't say real, but like pro sports contracts, where it's a lot of above board stuff. Where here, you know, we've heard a lot of stories now, not just a few, of players who are like, yeah, I thought I was getting 900,000 and I got like a fourth of that. How much have you heard of that as well? And does that make you skeptical? Like one of the players I spoke to who's now going through the NFL process, he was like, what I don't think people really understand what this is. There may be a number, and it's the value of the stuff that you may have access to, but you don't own it. Like, it's like, yeah, you may be driving a $200,000 car, but it ain't really your car. And the house you get to live in, that's not you, you know, like, and it's kind of an interesting like window into this, because this player who I think is pretty bright was like, yeah, there's a lot of stuff that, you know, it's not semantics. It's just how it gets spun, maybe. I was curious what you've gathered on your end of that.
Yeah, I think, I mean, you hear a ton of, it's like anecdotally, you hear a ton of stories of this player went to this school and they thought they were getting this and they got way less. And I think as we know from like covering college athletics, like you really just don't see players just come out and say, "Hey, I'm getting screwed. They're not paying me what they said they'd be paying me." I think players are uncomfortable doing that. Parents are uncomfortable doing that. So I don't
I'm
think we
surprised
hear.
there haven't been lawsuits. Like, I would
Yeah.
have thought by now we would have had some cases of
There should
players
be, I'm sure
suing.
there's a lot of disputes. Like you would think that's spilling out into the public way more, right? So yeah, like totally, Bruce. Like you hear all sorts of stories, and but it's also like the thing we've all been dealing with for the past few years is that it's all just like this stupid game of telephone of just like, oh, I heard he needs 300,000, or I heard they're paying him 25,000 just to visit, or like all these things that are just like not provable. And then I think you see people trying to take those numbers and extrapolate them into like what you need for a roster budget. And I don't think anybody really knows what the answer to that is either in terms of how much money you need to hold on to a team. So yeah, it's all very like it can be pretty fugazi with this stuff, and you just like it makes it hard to cover. But I think that also makes it makes it hard for the players, because the messaging is going to be what you expect in the recruiting process. It's going to be, well, here's what our top players make. So you become one of those guys, you're going to make that, right? But that's just never really totally how it goes. And so I think that even though this is way more pay for play, just straight up, than it was intended to be, the like, are you getting what they promise you is a really interesting question that I think, as these schools are clearly still trying to figure out how to nail the fundraising part of it, it's hard for them to a lot of times follow through on exactly what they're offering.
Hey, you said a few key words there, still figuring it out, right? Like, you got agents doing agent-y things, but in the NFL, you know, you can't really get away with false promises and things like that. Like, first of all, you know, the NFL has a very established system. It's been in place for decades. Everybody knows what the salary cap is. Everybody knows you can go on the internet and look up what the 49ers current payroll, you know, situation is. College is a mess, because we're still in the infant days of figuring out collectives, and you know, the rules keep changing. Can the coaches talk with the collectives or not? You know, USC recently came out, their collective came out and said, yeah, we're now like directly involved with high school recruits. That used to be a no-no. And so in my conversations with some people, what's clear is that like some schools do have a very Oregon, like that's a professional operation. Like it's former Nike executives. They know what they're doing. Some of these other schools, like every 6 months, there's a new person in charge of the collective and their strategy changes wildly. And, you know, the head coach might but then there's like a running backs coach who's off making deals on his own. It's just some of these schools, it's just a total mess. And I think that seeps out. Like, I don't think it's a coincidence that you see certain schools have more of these kid enters the portal, kid comes in, he's back in it 3 months. Like these are the schools that don't have control over things.
Yeah, that's right. And I think that, you know, if you want to go chase like the Portal King title, that's not a fun game to play a lot of times in terms of, you know, are you bringing in a bunch of guys who are kind of just mercenaries who are only going to your school for the payday you promised them? And if that's the case, then, you know, they're probably going to ask for more, or they're probably going to run into some problems. But I'm sure you guys have heard plenty of examples of this too, in the conversations you've had with coaches. For me, like in talking with coaches and talking with, you know, people on the personnel side, GMs, stuff like that, like these guys aren't going to come out and say this in press conferences, but I think I increasingly in the conversations I have, they are saying, yeah, contracts would make this better. You know, collective bargaining would make this better. Like, I hope we can just sort of get to that point in time. They're not going to be out in front saying, yep, let's get that fixed. But the people who are, you know, on the ground and in the weeds with this stuff, I think are definitely coming to the conclusion that that's the only way we're going to get a little bit more order in terms of this stuff. Everybody kind of playing by the same rules.
Max, can I ask you a question? So obviously, I think our listeners know this. You grew up in Nebraska. You went there. You actually still live. Now you're back living there.
Mm-hmm.
So year two for Matt Rhule. You know, it was pretty much every really good job he's done in the college. It was a rocky first year, and then hit the gas, and it went great. You know, like I thought his first two stops absolutely was that way. So we know he had a huge win on the recruiting front with Dylan Raiola last year. What is the vibe now around that program? Like, how much better do you think they are? We feel, at least I do, like it's going to be a lot harder at Nebraska now because of you're not in what was the Big Ten West anymore. I mean, how do you see them, and because they seem like they were pretty, like they were playing the game when, you know, in the portal, and they made some big swings, and you know, when Scott Frost was there. So how's the operation now too?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a little bit of a disruptive you know, spring with Trev Alberts leaving for Texas A&M, and then they bring in Troy Dannon from Washington. But I think that's also a win for Matt Rhule. I think that's a hire that he was happy about. And you know, I think in terms of the roster, you know, I think it's steadily improving. I think he is the kind of guy who, and you're right, Bruce, like that's kind of the trajectory has been pretty similar the times that he's done this at the college level. You know, that this team is going to over time play better than the sum of its parts. And you know, I think in year two at Baylor they were you know, going to a bowl game. And in year three, they're playing for a Big 12 title. So I think that it seems like things are pointing in the right direction. They've got, you know, Dylan Raiola, who I think, you know, everyone will expect him to just start right away. But they've also got another quality freshman quarterback in their room, and Danny Kalen. So a good situation at quarterback. You know, I think being able to hold on to Tony White, their defensive coordinator, who did a terrific job in year one and had lots of job opportunities. I think that's big in terms of them taking a step forward. You just kind of get the offense fixed. They just could not throw the ball last year. Obviously issues at quarterback, lots of injuries at running back. So if that offense can get to, you know, a level where they can be pretty consistent in Big Ten play, then I think they have a chance to make a bowl game and maybe be better than that. And obviously, it's been a very, very, very long time since a bowl game. So I think that would be a pretty positive step in the right direction.
I like how Bruce just kind of abruptly was like, yeah, you know what? I'm done talking about the portal.
I have exhausted my portal interest. What else do you got?
We hit the 30-minute mark. I'm actually like really intrigued.
I thought you guys would want to talk Colorado. I thought there's go ahead.
Well, there's one I definitely want to bring up, a specific player. But first, as you guys started talking about Nebraska, I started having deja vu to all the times Max was on here and we talked about one particular Nebraska quarterback. So I think we should take a second to acknowledge the huge performance this week by Birmingham Stallions quarterback Adrian Martinez, 18-28 for 344 yards and three touchdowns.
You need to acknowledge Adrian's playmaking skills. I feel like you are, because you knew I liked him, you always kind of tried to gnaw at his Achilles.
It just, you know, I felt bad for the guy because he had kind of like how Dylan Raiola is now going to have the whole Nebraska program on his shoulders. Like, because Adrian Martinez and Scott Frost came in together, he was just like, the burden of leading that turnaround was all on him, and he would have his turnover problems and whatnot. And like, it just didn't seem like he was getting that much better. But hey, he has found a home in the Birmingham Stallions in the UFL. I think he might have been the UFL player of the week this week. I can't claim my.
And guys, the starter of the Birmingham Stallions at the start of the season was Matt Corral.
Oh, so he's overtaken
Matt Corral.
Matt Corral.
If he's run away with that job, then he must be doing something right. So yeah, Adrian Martinez putting it all together. Stu,
I love.
I hope you're watching
names,
on the weekends, my man.
I just pulled up the story and like it's just funny. So Deion Kane was the leading receiver, right? Clemson great. Deion Kane.
I've watched probably more of the Birmingham Stallions than I would. There's a bunch of recognizable names. Max, I know you'll know this former 5-star, big commodity. Marvin Wilson is.
Mm-hmm. Marvin Wilson, Big Marv.
Big Marv. So
he's back.
Jace Sternberger of Texas A&M fame, 4 receptions for 73 yards. Ricky Pearson Jr., 2 or so. You know, I haven't watched UFL yet, but it does seem like with the merger that they did.
The UFL. How have you not turned on the TV?
Because there were other, it was a spring weekend. It was nice weather. We went out and did things. Yeah.
We're not that busy. Okay, my favorite UFL moment of the season was my former colleague, Brock Heward, who I think we all know and like. And Brock's really good at what he does. They throw him down now on the sideline, usually on the Clat crew. And he's, you know, you have this great access, and Brock is not shy about, you know, sticking a microphone in there. So he's got Bob Stoops there. Now, this is not OU Bob Stoops from like 15 years ago. It's a little more relaxed Bob, tequila business Bob, you know, the one who could stomach Kersey Bob, all those things. And
keep going.
But so Bob is like kind of humoring Brock, is asking. I think Brock stayed with him for like 3 plays, and finally, like, Bob looked at him and was like, hey, I got to coach a game, and just want to, like, it was almost like he wanted to backhand Brock, and it was a good moment. So,
by the way, you guys didn't mention that the head coach of the Birmingham Stallions is none other than Skip Holtz.
Skip Holtz. We should just go through the UFL stats leaders and just do a game of remember that guy.
Maybe next week's guest, Bruce, will have to bring on somebody who's been calling the UFL games to give us the full rundown. Okay. Before you go, Max, we got to talk about the most amusing development in the portal this week. Deion Hayes, who led Pitt with 10.5 tackles for loss in his first season as a starter, is entering the portal. And in a rare moment of candor that you don't usually see with this, he flat out told the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette on the record, I just don't believe we can win now. I believe we were going to win games, but I believe we're in a developmental stage, and I just can't do that right now. A source said Hayes told teammates his biggest reason for entering the portal was the state of Pitt's offense, which was brutal last year. So, man, like, this guy decided to enter the portal. His right. Very good player. I'm sure he'll be coveted. But on his way out of town, just kind of threw the rest of the team under the bus.
Yeah, you know, usually you just kind of see the Apple note, respect my decision.
Yeah.
You see the edit. You see the usual stuff. You don't usually don't hear people just straight up saying, let me tell you why I'm leaving this school.
it's because we stink.
I should note he has since apologized on social media, obviously, for the statements that he made, and said that he actually does believe in what's going on.
No, he doesn't.
And is very grateful for his coaches. So that's all been fixed now. But yeah, Dan, it's you don't hear that. You don't hear very often that a defensive guy says our offense sucks, so I think I got to bail.
I mean, a lot. I'm guessing most of the Pitt team off.
You hear receivers feeling like our quarterback sucks. Yeah, I got to bail. You don't really hear defensive ends saying, "I don't know if we're going to score enough points this year."
One of the most puzzling coaching things that happened in the last few years, but it falls under the radar because it's not Alabama. You know, Pitt had Kenny Pickett. He becomes first round. He leads them ACC championship, first round pick, and Pat Narduzzi's like, our offensive coordinator throws the ball too much. He and Mark Whipple have a falling out, and ever since then, like their offense has just been abysmal, like embarrassingly abysmal. Like, he had it going, ACC championship. Is Pitt going to be a factor in the ACC going forward? And then just like all the momentum from that season is gone.
And and Jordan Addison leaving after that too, right?
Jordan Addison left right after that
season,
right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Hayes is gonna he's gonna have a lot of options. Like, he's a plug and play kind of starter defensive end. Will he be able to find a contender who can win now, whose offense is up to his standard? We shall see.
Maybe he'll end up at USC, where the offense has been terrific and the defense hasn't been. So
that would actually make a lot of sense.
All right, Stu. Do you want to ask Max big picture Colorado stuff, or are you done with him?
It's more that I don't think our listeners want to hear more about Colorado.
Bruce is about to be like, Max, you used to live in Austin. Let's talk about Texas.
I'm not wrong. Like, so all right. So, Max, you teed yourself up. That's fine.
Oh, boy. No. Like, they're national.
You see, you can open the door and let the cats back in and go out and run them or whatever. Listen, so we alluded briefly to Silas Bolden. Obviously, they lost two terrific receivers who both could go in the first round and a really good tight end. Yours is back. This doesn't have to be necessarily portal stuff, but you're losing, two standout anchors in the defensive line, in the middle of the defensive line. Do you think as they move to the SEC, is this a national title contender right now?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, that's the intent, for sure. And I think that they've gone out and been. You know, their portal haul is not extensive in terms of numbers, but it's very impressive in terms of, picking up Matthew Golden at wide receiver from Houston, and Andrew Makuba at safety from Clemson, Trey Moore, who's the top defensive player in the American Conference last year at UTSA, edge rusher. He's at Texas now too. They signed another elite class with a bunch of guys that would probably play right away. And honestly, guys, in this spring cycle, Texas, like, you're seeing the players that are going into the portal for Texas are the, like, blue chip backups who just are blocked by a lot of other blue chips like that, which is what you usually see from, like, Georgia and Alabama when the portal opens up. So I think that kind of speaks to the roster that Steve Sarkisian is building. I think Jonathan Brooks at running back was really talented, but I think I like what they've got with CJ Baxter and these Jaden Blue and these freshmen they've brought in. So I think they're good at that spot. Obviously, that coaching staff has just also had a ton of continuity. You know, it's not really been picked apart too much in Sark's tenure. So yeah, I think even no matter who's on the schedule for Texas this year, and it is tougher, and it's going to be they got Michigan too in non-conference play. So like they're going to be one of the more must-watch teams this year, but. Yeah, I think the expectations are like, playing for an SEC title.
Let's get a quick little vote of confidence here. If I give you a percentage that Quinn Ewers is going to win the Heisman, what would you put it at? Stu?
20%.
Max?
Bruce, isn't J.J. McCarthy going to be a top five pick?
Is a decent chance of it.
All things are possible, buddy. All things are possible at this position.
What are you poking him in the eye for no reason? What, I don't understand.
No, I'm just saying, like, we all watched college football last year and we're like, oh, I'm not sure if this guy's that great. And now the whole world is telling us he's pretty special. I'm not saying Quinn Ewers is on his level yet, but I think, I don't think he'll win the Heisman this year. But I also don't think they need him to in order for them to be a playoff team.
I'll say this. If Texas were to come in the first season, their first season, the SEC, and win the SEC, and I would assume to be able to do that, he'd have to be pretty good. Then he'd be on the very, very short list to win the Heisman, I think.
Yeah.
That,
yeah.
Or, you know, beat Georgia's coming there in mid-October. Like,
so my
have some great game
percent,
and beat
Bruce, like, what, 10% or something like that?
I'm closer with Max than I am with you, Stu. I'm not saying you're way off, Stu, but I feel like it's about 10%.
Oh, can I lower mine then? I thought I was being low and saying 20%. Yeah, 9%. All right, Max. Well, we're glad you were able to take some time today because I know you're having to monitor the portal 24/7 now. What for people who want to keep up with your coverage of this very fast moving story, tell us what the game plan is here for the next couple weeks.
Yeah, you know, when you go on The Athletic, we have a live blog for tracking the transfer portal that we're updating every day. So if you want to kind of see who are like the relevant players and trends and kind of developments, be sure to check that out. The whole staff's contributing to that. We'll have our best available rankings of the top players in the portal. We'll have that up, I believe, today. You know, have a piece up this morning on the kind of the big takeaways and numbers from day one, and yeah, lots of coverage of the guys going in, and you know, will we be blessed with a story like Deion Sanders blowing up his entire roster last spring? I don't know. We'll see. Hope so.
Who would be the, if that was going to happen, who would blow, who would it be? Deion again? Who's most likely to blow up their entire roster?
I don't know. Who is there, like a year one guy that jumps to mind for you guys? Because like some of them, like, you know, Jed Fish is inheriting a good team. He's not going to like blow in. I mean, like who's in a tough spot here in year one?
It's weird.
Yeah, I mean,
one who has spoken up the most and been the most like, not Deion like, but has been Cignetti at Indiana. I mean, he has, you know, talked really big, but I don't know if there's like, you know, if there's enough to bang a bunch of trash cans around. So
Fran Brown. He's everybody's talking about how there's buzz around him in the transfer portal.
Sure. Yeah. I could see Syracuse, you know, being one of those that has some, they've had some attrition, probably will have some more. Yeah. I think, you know, we're going to see some of these first year coaches, like they're, you know, they especially the ones like Indiana that took a ton of guys in January, you know, you're going to have some attrition on the back of the roster there. But yeah, I don't know. I think that, there'll be some good, but we just haven't really had fireworks yet. So I'm very curious to see, will there be, I don't know that there will be a Caleb Downs, a Quinshon Judkins, a Walter Nolan, those kinds of players becoming available here in the next few weeks, but you never know.
I think they've got to because of the high profile programs that are on the hunt. Like, and look, let's not be naive, you know, Alabama, Michigan, whoever, they're not sitting there waiting to, oh, I wonder who will pop up in the portal. Like, those conversations are taking place behind the scenes. They know who might be available. And, you know, I would just think those would be a very attractive destinations if they want you.
Yeah, definitely. And there'll be some of the time with those kinds of programs, it's like if the guy's in the portal, you kind of already know they're probably going there. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see if some of these teams that are going to be like preseason top 10 types of teams are picking up some big names that you know, they think are going to take them to the next level.
All right, Max, we appreciate your time, especially being very generous. And we know how swamped you are. We know how in demand you are for other podcasts. So thanks for fitting us in.
Hey, I used to be banned from this pod. So it's every time you ask, it's a treat.
How many people
treat.
Are on Stu's blacklist?
I don't know. Everybody claims they're banned. Nobody's ever been banned from this podcast.
It's more like it's like in Twitter terms, we were more like muted than blocked, I think, probably.
Max, you're
giving me nothing here.
Max, you're welcome anytime.
Thanks, guys.
Except for the times that we have already booked somebody else, but otherwise, you're always welcome. All right, Bruce, it was a light week in the mailbag. You guys, please send your questions to theaudiblepod@gmail.com. Just a couple ones, though, I wanted to touch on. Remember last week we had a question about what the name should be for the new CFP rounds? Couple good suggestions here by Brett, a Texas fan. The semifinal should be the Awesome Foursome. The first round should be the Tailgate 12 because they'll be on campuses. That's the one I think they should take, Tailgate 12.
Not a bad idea.
I mean, that really emphasizes the on-campus aspect. The only problem now, as I see it, though, is like there aren't actually 12 teams playing that weekend, but it is the round of 12. And Bruce
committed that suggestion.
If you do ever decide to go to Australia, hit me up. I've lived in the US for a decade, but I'm originally from Australia and can give you all the advice you need on where to go and where not to make it worthwhile. You need at least a couple weeks, though. It's a big country.
Okay, thank you. Who was Tailgate 12 from?
Brett Collette.
Thank you, Brett.
Make sure he gets his full credit if that ends up happening. This has been a popular question, both in written and audible, for me. Northwestern's temporary lakefront stadiums from Ryan in Redondo Beach. He's
Know
heading
Ryan.
to Evanston this fall for business grad school. What are your thoughts on Northwestern's plan to use a temporary lakefront stadium on campus for the next two stadiums? Will you be making the trip to catch a game? And do you think they'll still schedule bigger brands visiting Soldier or Wrigley Field for increased gate revenue? Bruce, did you see the tweets and the graphics and whatnot about this?
I did. It reminded me of, we've done a lot of, not a handful of Northwestern games where we've been there on a Friday and been in. It's a really beautiful facility that is right on the water. Their stadium was so, abysmal. Anything is better than that. It's just such a dud environment. It's nuts that they're in the Big Ten and they have that. It's like it would be a bad stadium if it was in the MAC, So to me, anything is better than that.
Yeah, so that's why they're downsizing. Some people, when the plans first came out for this new stadium, and I think it's only 30 or 35,000 seats instead of 50,000, people are like, that's, they're making fun of them for that. And I'm like, well, that's the point. Like, those were not very good atmospheres when they were playing an early season game and there were 15,000 people in a 50,000 seat stadium. Or also not ideal is they'd be playing Ohio State and, the entire one side of the stadium was in red.
Do you
So
think knowing that school, if they were very good consistently, they could get 35,000 to 40,000 Northwestern fans?
they got more than that. I mean, I was there when, they were going to when the Rose Bowl season, and they sold the place out full of Northwestern fans. And also look at basketball. Basketball's gotten really good the last couple of years.
Basketball,
And
you don't need you're not getting 40,000 for games. You're not in the
no,
carry.
but it's been it's gone from, like, I remember going to basketball games where half the stadium was Indiana, half the arena was Indiana fans, and now they've turned that. I think that if they're good, like, and by good I mean top 25 team regularly, they'll fill that 35,000 seat stadium. I mean, you can't obviously keep Ohio State fans out. The key would be to sell more season tickets. If you can get a bigger season ticket base, then there's less tickets available for the other team. In terms of this on-campus thing, it's a very small piece of real estate. I mean, that campus has always struggled to find new places to put things because you are on the lake. They built that huge practice facility, and next to it is the field where the, nationally prominent lacrosse team plays and the soccer team. And that's the field they're going to turn into a temporary football stadium. And it's very hard for me to picture, like, where is that 15,000 seat grandstand going to go?
Going to be on a
But
barge in the water, Stu.
that'd be awesome. But apparently this is modeled, it was Pat Fitzgerald who originally came up with the idea, and it's modeled after the 16th hole at the Phoenix Open, where apparently, I'm not a huge golf guy, there's not normally any stands, and they erect a big grandstand that, like, hovers over that hole. So that's what they're gonna do. I think it's a much better, they don't have a lot of great options, but the key to this one is that it's on campus and the students can go. Some of the other options, like playing at this, there's a soccer stadium the MLS team used to play in that's on the south side of Chicago, nowhere near their campus. Like, nobody's gonna go to those games from Evanston. Even Soldier Field is a big ask. So, but yeah, I think they, it sounds like it's only going to be used for the early season games. When they play Ohio State in November, that game's not going to be at a 15,000 seat on campus stadium. It's going to be in Wrigley. It's going to be, I don't know about Soldier. Everybody assumes Soldier Field. It sounds like that is proving to be problematic in terms of the Bears not wanting to turn the stadium around in 24 hours. So, I assume they'll be playing some of those games at Wrigley Field. There was a rumor that they might play their home game against Wisconsin in Wisconsin, which would not be ideal. There's no way. I mean, look, there's no good answer. The next 2 years are going to be rough for them. And but then they're going to have this beautiful, sparkling, modern stadium that replaces the old dilapidated Ryan Field that you were just like crapping all over just now.
All right. Well, as always, send your questions to theaudiblepod@gmail.com, and we will see you next time. How did we get away with the things we used to do?